From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The story at the heart of Kenneth Jones' new play is true. And it seems crazy today, but when you think about it, something like this could probably still happen. Here are the basics. A racist state senator in the Deep South gets wind of a children's book at a local library. It's a whimsical story of two fluffy bunnies who fall in love and get married. But here's the catch. One of the bunnies is white, the other is black. And this is in the days before civil rights. The senator tries to get the book off the shelves, but the librarian stands her ground. That's part of it, but this is also a play about opposites. It's about how a challenge reveals a person's character, and there's a love story in here, too. It's the latest production from the Pioneer Theater Company, and we're talking about it today. It's called Alabama Story, after the news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we hope you'll consider joining them. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. Visit us online at KUER.org for details. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It's outrageous, the story at the heart of Kenneth Jones' new play, Alabama Story, which is getting its world premiere at the Pioneer Theater Company. It's about a children's book, a real book, by the way. The play is based on a true story. Anyway, it's probably the cover of the book that first freaked out some people in the country's South when it was published in 1958. The book is called The Rabbit's Wedding. It's beautifully illustrated by the acclaimed and gifted Garth Williams. He's the man who did the illustrations for Charlotte's Web and Stuart Little. The story is about these two rabbits who fall in love and get married in a beautiful forest. But as you see there on the cover, one of the rabbits is white. The other is black. So that's the framework for the story, how a racist state senator in the Deep South tried to get the book off the shelves and how a librarian protects the book. But Kenneth Jones says it's also a play about other things, opposites, about black and white, of course, but male and female and north and south, insiders, outsiders. There are other themes here, too. And today in the program, we're profiling the play, which opens this week. We invite you to join us if you have comments or questions. 801-585-WEST is the number. Our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. Kenneth Jones is a New York-based playwright and a lyricist and a freelance journalist. He is, I should mention, Alabama Story is his first play, first fully produced work anyway. And he's joining us here in the studio. Kenneth Jones, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Morning, Doug.
Karen Eisenberg is also with us. She's directing Alabama Story. This is her third season as Pioneer Theater Company's artistic director. And Karen Eisenberg, welcome.
Hi.
Thanks for doing this. I'll introduce some of the actors as we go along here, but I want to start, Kenneth, with you and Karen. And Kenneth, you first. I guess I wanted to start with something I read where you had talked about having this affection for newspapers, which you see in the play. Emily, this character we'll talk about, she's the librarian. She shares your affection for newspapers. This is an important part of your daily routine, and I guess it was in a newspaper where you first found Emily.
Yeah, I look for ideas for plays and musicals in all sources, from all sources. And I was reading the New York Times in May 2000 and came across an obituary that immediately jumped out at me. Emily Reed died. She was 89 years old, and she was this librarian I'd never heard of, a sort of footnote to history, I thought. But there was something about her story that sort of leaped off the page to me, that she was a woman alone being put on the griddle by segregationist politicians in the 50s. And it just it instantly seemed like a play to me. Lots of opposites, as you said, black and white and insider and outsider, north and south.
Yeah. You mean all of that stuff sort of revealed itself at the moment, kind of?
Absolutely. I instantly thought it was a play. Bigger than life characters, bigger than life forces, liberal and conservative, and that it was about this book that was so beautiful and innocent, mm-hmm. and conflict seemed to sort of leap right off the page, and that Garth Williams, a very well-known illustrator, Charlotte's Web, Stuart Little, Little House on the Prairie,
yeah.
Cricket in Times Square. This is a guy we all know. We all grew up with this guy, his books. And I thought, I knew he would be somehow a narrator, somehow a character, somehow a guide in this world, because I saw it as a piece about storytelling, and reading aloud became important to me.
At what point did you decide you had to maybe go to Montgomery? Because I guess a big part of the way this play revealed itself to you was going there. Is that right?
It was hugely important to soak up the perfume of the South and to be there, and to be there in the summertime when it is stifling. One of the opening lines is the air was always thick, and it means a lot. So to go in the summer and to do a research trip down there was vital. And I talked to historians. I talked to the Rosa Parks Museum director. I talked to local historians, local librarians. I went to a small town called Demopolis.
Which is featured in the play, of course.
Yeah. And there are interviews I did, and some of those lines exist. I don't think those people know that, but it informed the play greatly.
Just trying to get a sense of the place, right, and maybe the language of it. And I wonder how did – like there's this great sense of – Emily has this affection for these granite steps for this particular building where she works in Montgomery. You went there, I guess, right?
And I did.
I guess that must have informed that impression, right?
The Alabama State Library Service is in the State Archive Building, and there's a rise of granite steps, and there are marble columns, and it looks like Washington, D.C. And I walked her halls, and a historian there walked me around, and I saw a door that said Director's Office, and my heart sort of beat faster knowing I was in the building that she was in.
Yeah.
Very inspiring. Ran right across the street from the Capitol. You can see the Capitol out her window, as we say in the play.
Yeah.
Walked across there, got a tour of the Capitol, which was the senator's domain. So I walked, I stood in his chambers and in the Senate chambers, and stood on the star where Jefferson Davis was inaugurated as the first Confederate president.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing.
You know, I want you to give us a setting. There's you mentioned how Garth Williams is kind of the narrator for the play, and so I want to actually get a reading. This is Stephen D'Ambrose. Let me introduce him, as a matter of fact. Author and illustrator. He plays Arthur and illustrator Garth Williams, as well as a number of other characters, which we'll talk about as we go. 40-year stage veteran, performed widely around the country. It's first time with the Pioneer Theater Company, though, but welcome, Stephen D'Ambrose.
Thanks for being with us.
I introduce Stephen in this role, and I want you to help me, if you would, Kenneth Jones, set this moment up, because we're talking about the South before the Civil Rights era. So everyone is spazzing out about integration and segregation and how that's all going to work. And there's this editorial that appears in a Florida newspaper, which you include in the play, and that's what Stephen's going to read. But set this up for us, because it's crazy.
Yeah, we wanted to, we wanted to paint a picture of how desperate some people were to see villainy in the simplest of things, which extends to real life. If a black man is with a white woman, somehow that image is shocking. So in this moment, we wanted to show that finding hidden messages in literature happens across the board and happens in many places. And this is another book that was also targeted, a true story, another children's literature that was targeted.
Yeah, from the Orlando Sentinel. This was March of 1959. Here's Stephen D'Ambrose as Garth Williams from the play Alabama Story.
From the Stop, Look, and Listen column by Henry Balch, the Orlando Sentinel, March 15th, 1959. Have you read the story of the three little pigs lately? Popping up from a brand new children's book in Florida libraries are pigs of a different color for a new and darker era. The pig whose home is made of straw is white. The pig whose home is made of sticks is tan, while the pig whose home is made of bricks is black as soot. The paler porcine friends flee the wolf to find refuge in the sturdier dwelling of that black pig. Clearly, The Three Little Pigs is no longer just a Walt Disney fable about logical thinking, but a tool to promote Negro supremacy and the co-mingling of the races. It's called brainwashing in Mother Russia. It's time for the Florida legislature to step into our libraries before our own house is blown down like so much hay and sticks.
One of the things that we wanted to do here, obviously, is to have Garth be this nimble player who plays multiple roles and picks up scenes and bleeds into other scenes, and to keep it theatrical and not make it a movie. We wanted to make it as buoyant as possible. And Stephen brilliantly steps into a lot of different roles.
It's great. Karen Eisenberg, I want to bring you in on this point. Garth is... He's a passerby. He's like an extra in a movie. You see him, so his presence is kind of constant. Talk a little bit about how you wanted to stage that and the role that this Garth Williams character plays.
It was really interesting because when I first read the play, I was like, how are we going to do this? And there were adjustments I had Ken make so that the audience could participate in the transition that the Garth character makes into the other character he plays. So it's Stephen playing Garth, playing the passerby, playing Balch, playing the coffee cart man, playing a state representative. And, I mean, we're lucky because it's magical the way Stephen is able to do it. It's a physical and actorial transformation with just a teeny costume assistance. It's not like we see him changing his full outfit there. It's a hat or a tie or a jacket. Just boom, and there's a whole new person.
Stephen, is it I suppose it's challenging. You have to shift gears like that. I mean,
well, yes, it's a challenge, but it's fun too. It's fun to surprise the audience. It's fun to try and come up with these characters with the wonderful words that I've been given. It's great fun.
Kenneth Jones, that the I want to have Stephen read another. This is kind of a soliloquy for Garth Williams. How much of it is Garth Williams, do you figure, and how much did you want to sort of fictionalize or create as a character, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, they're embedded in his Act Two opening is what his public press speech was, what his comment was, and I think some of that is in here.
Yeah,
but I also wanted to,
because we should say he's mystified by the fact that this state senator in the deep South saw in a white and black rabbit this sinister sort of thing.
Yes, and that was his public statement. I chose to actually not go investigating private letters to see what might have been behind it. I do take him at his word. I think the mystery of it is more interesting if he says, I did this for contrast. I did this
for art.
For art.
Yeah.
So that is very much his public statement, and what appeared in newspapers around the world was that statement. I also wanted to try to imagine what kind of cocktail conversation might be when he's talking about this, and that's what happens in this piece.
Yeah, it's a great scene. Well, here's Stephen D'Ambrose again, reading the character of Garth Williams from the play Alabama Story.
There's a villain in Alabama, folks, and I have been cast in the role. Yes, I wrote and illustrated The Rabbit's Wedding. The infamous, the scandalous, the pornographic Garth Williams, an American-born, European-educated painter whose subject matter is bunny rabbits. How rare for me to be in the spotlight, as I can usually be found as a supporting player, illustrating books by E.B. White and Laura Ingalls Wilder. Those perverts. It's my parents' fault. My father was a cartoonist, my mother a landscape artist. Everybody in my home was always either painting or drawing. They exposed me to books filled with art from all over the world, the most outrageous and arousing images. And so my goal, like their goal, is to drown children in a watercolor world of the most unspeakable aspects of the human experience, namely kindness
tolerance, amity, tenderness, humor, joy, respect for others, interest in the natural world, and hope for the future.
Stephen D'Ambrose reading from Alabama Story. So Kenneth Jones, Garth says a little bit later in this scene that I owe no one an explanation. He says, no, it's about contrast. Black looks better against white, and this is a matter of art, and I was inspired by Japanese prints and those kinds of things. It's hard to know whether, in fact, that's true, because if he is talking about kindness and amity and love and stuff like that, having a black rabbit with a white rabbit, especially in 1958, seems even more remarkable, I think, don't you?
Yeah. I don't... he did talk about 11th century, that was his, 11th century Chinese art and visual balance, and the book was published in black and white. So having two white rabbits is a lot less interesting than a black and white rabbit. So his motives are a mystery, I think.
Yeah. That we'll leave it at that. I think that's nice. Yeah.
And art owes no excuses.
Right. I mean, that is the point that you make.
And Emily later says, I hope that the books will speak for me. And I hope that books speak for themselves. And
so, Karen, the earliest drafts that you saw. Wait, and tell this story, because you're in Alabama at the time when you at some point, right?
I had been working before I took the position here at Pioneer as a freelance director, and I was working at Alabama Shakespeare Festival during the summer, and I got a call from my friend Ken Jones saying, how long are you going to be there? Because I have this idea and I want to come to Montgomery. And I'm like, well, lucky day. I have a 2-bedroom apartment on this trip and come stay with me.
Yeah.
So Ken arrives and then he disappears and he's off driving and going and doing. And it's like, great. And he stayed with me for about a week. And as he left, I said, if you if you ever write this play, I'd love to see it. And 2 years ago, an envelope arrived.
So how much time has passed?
It's 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I had worked on two other shows at the time, and I had a full-time journalism job. And so it was 2 years ago this month that I sent it to you.
Yeah.
But you had been working on it for how long?
Since, the very seeds of it.
Yeah. The obit was 2000.
It was 2000.
Yeah.
I wrote, the first two scenes I wrote were this hearing scene between Emily and the senator, and another scene between Lily and Joshua, the sort of secondary reflective story. And that was around 2002 or 2003. Put it in a drawer, kept collecting research notes, and then in 2009 went and did my research trip.
It's pretty amazing that a director comes to the play so early in the process. Is he still figuring it out, even researching it?
Yeah. It was sort of fortuitous and unique circumstances. And some of it is Ken and I had worked together before, so I feel lucky that I got it. But once I read it, I was like snapping it up because I didn't want anybody else to get their fingers on it.
And you didn't know anything about it, right? I hadn't really revealed.
No, he
much.
Wouldn't tell me what he was researching down there. So I had really kind of no idea what this all was. And when I read the play, he's right. That story is so intriguing, and the fact that it's based on these real-life people is exciting. On top of it, and we haven't talked about this yet, is, it's interwoven with this fictional story, which just then takes it beyond historical drama into something that feels much more personal.
Kenneth Jones, you've talked about how you didn't want it to be seen as a docudrama, which, of course, that makes sense. And you introduce these other characters. We're not going to spend a lot of time with them, actually, because we don't have the actors here to talk about them, although they're an important element in the – this is a sort of a love story.
Yeah.
It's a story of – there's some regret in here, but this is the fictional part of it, and it – but it also gives the play a kind of heart as well.
Yes, I think as Karen said, it's the personal side of the history.
Yeah.
How does segregation affect the regular person? How is innocence spoiled by hate? Happens with the book, and it happens in this kind of Romeo and Juliet fable that we've added, that I added to it. It's the personal side. It's a small town personal side of history. African American man reunites with a white woman in adulthood, and they go over the issues of their childhood and a tragic event that happened in their childhood. And always books connect them. There's always a book in every scene. Yeah. Everybody has an iconic book, and the most iconic book in that case is the Bible.
The Bible, yeah. This is Joshua who – it's funny. He carries a book, but he doesn't – he carries the Bible. And we don't need to say too much. I don't want to give too much away, but the Bible doesn't really have a meaning for him, at least at this point now. It's got his mom's name in it.
Yeah. Again, the two stories, I really wanted the historical and the fact, the facts of the case in one on one hand, and I wanted their story to be sensual and spiritual. And so the play tries to merge the historical and the sensual and the spiritual and the intellectual.
Kenneth Jones is with us. He is a New York-based playwright. He wrote Alabama Story. Karen Eisenberg directs the production. We also heard from Stephen D'Ambrose, who plays Garth Williams. Alabama Story premieres tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the Pioneer Theater Company. Runs through January 24th. For tickets and information, you can call 801-581-6961. Or if you didn't write that down, you can go to our website for the particulars, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll meet some other characters from the play when we get back from a break. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling the latest production from the Pioneer Theater Company. It's a play about, well, a lot of things. It's about a book, a children's book, two fluffy bunnies who frolic in the forest and fall in love. And this is a real book, by the way, from Garth Williams called The Rabbit's Wedding. The play is based on a real story about the uproar over this children's book because, as we've been saying, one of the rabbits is black and one is white. That was the kernel of the idea that got Kenneth Jones thinking. It's called Alabama Story. It opens this week. It's the world premiere at the Pioneer Theater Company. Kenneth Jones is with us. Karen Eisenberg directs the production. She's also here. We have some of the actors with us as well, whom I'll get to here in just a moment. So one thing that you had mentioned is when you were wandering around, I think you sort of referred to this earlier in Montgomery, there in that building, that you kind of felt the presence of Emily. It's almost like you established a kind of relationship. You must, I guess, as you're writing about her and researching her.
I think you have to imagine it. And I did sort of the research that many actors do in trying to figure out the characters they play and trying to walk in their footsteps. And I know Greta Lambert has been over to the State Archive building and walked those halls as well. Very inspiring. I did feel her presence. A historian from the Department of Archives and History took me around and said, "We think this is where her office was. We don't know. It was 60 years ago." Yes, I very much felt her.
Yeah. So there's a scene, and let's introduce this also to Senator Higgins, if you would, this other character. He's also based on a real figure.
Yes, yes. A real state senator was a huge proponent of libraries in Alabama, ironically.
Ironically, yeah.
Segregationist through and through, one of the most vocal, largely forgotten today.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about obituaries, I did look up his obituary, and it was maybe an inch. Mm. He's disappeared. Well, Emily did not, obviously. So he reads about this controversial book in the segregationist newspaper and has a response to it.
Yeah. Well, here's the scene. You want to set this up to him? I guess that's it, right?
I think this is the senator
he's testing her. He's trying to figure out where she's from. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, he knows where she's from. He knows a lot about her. But this is the part of the opposites, I'm guessing, the insider-outsider part.
Yes, yes. And he, you know, yeah, I think it explains itself. Yeah. The senator makes a call, pays a call.
Pays a call, absolutely. Let me introduce the actors first. Greta Lambert plays Emily. the librarian. She's a company member of the Alabama Shakespeare Festival, has performed around the country. And Greta Lambert, by the way, welcome to you.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks very much for doing this. William Perry plays Senator Higgins. It's his first production with the Pioneer Theater Company. He has created original roles for 10 Broadway plays. He's performed in some 50 regional productions. And William Perry, welcome to you.
Good morning.
So here they are, Greta Lambert and William Perry playing Emily and Senator Higgins from Alabama Story.
Senator, I did not expect to see you until the library budget meeting, which is coming up very soon now.
It's a nice office. Nice big office. Nice to have a nice big office. It was a good idea for the library service to be moved to this great building. The State Archive building. Stone's throw from the Capitol, and I can see you from out my window. Keep an eye on you. Do you mind if I smoke, may I?
I would prefer that you not, Senator. We're a little funny about fire here at the Alabama Library Service.
Yeah, of course.
Is there something specific you wanted, sir, about the budget for the coming year?
Miss Reed, you've been here, a little over a year. And as often as we met in library funding meetings last year, and as often as we might have passed each other at the coffee cart, I feel that I don't know you as well as I'd like to. Ours is a relationship of you asking for money for the libraries, and me finding the money and giving the money, generously. That's us doing our jobs and doing them well, but beyond that, who are we? What's the stuff inside us?
Is this an official inquiry?
Informal. Separate from our upcoming hearing.
Hearing?
A meeting, the budget meeting. Separate from that. I wanted to talk to you about recent events, get your perspective on them, take your pulse.
My pulse?
Informal, not state senator and state librarian, but Alabamian to Alabamian. Talking about Alabama.
I feel as though you're going to ask me if I know the state flower.
This is not a test.
Goldenrod.
Correct.
Senator, I'm going to stop you there and admit to you that I have a very busy day ahead of me. Indeed, I'm going to be late for my 11 a.m. meeting.
Well, can you put it off?
It's a regular, weekly meeting. Every Friday morning. One of the many meetings that is vital to the future of Alabama libraries. I know you appreciate that. And I am chair of the meeting, so you see.
Well, it's hot in here, isn't it? It's very hot for Easter time. I can't remember it being this hot this early. Tell me, Miss Reed, would you prefer this pulse-taking to be a private one or a public one?
I think we should pick this up at our next budget meeting with our respective colleagues present.
Well, I'm curious, if I may keep you one moment longer. There are some book titles that the state of Alabama is concerned about. Books that might be considered controversial.
Controversial?
Against the way we run things here.
I see.
The state was wondering if these books were being promoted by the library service.
I am guessing you have a list of these books.
A list? I do.
Epitaph for Dixie. Segregation, is it justified? Strange Fruit. A Dangerous Woman.
Now, that last one. My mother-in-law. Smart woman. She told me she couldn't even finish it. It was so bad.
And the list goes on. Well, I cannot tell you at the moment if these books are in our collection, but I can certainly find out for you. Is that all, Senator?
We will let you get to work, Miss Reed. To your meeting, on which hangs the future of our libraries. We understand. The future is important. On that, we agree.
It's William Perry and Greta Lambert as Senator Higgins and Emily. So I guess Kenneth Jones, he's intimidating her, obviously.
Yeah. This is his first volley. This is his first attempt.
Yeah, first attempt. It's funny, though, and there is another moment here. And William Perry, I want you to talk a little bit about Senator Higgins, because he's not a one-dimensional character. I mean, clearly he's a blowhard. Clearly he's a racist. Clearly he's trying to scare her a little bit. But he's a more complicated character than that. Maybe, William Perry, let me ask you, how do you see Senator Higgins? He's a mean guy, but he loves Tom Sawyer.
Yeah. Well, I think he's kind of – I read this this book, There Goes My Everything. I don't know. Have you ever heard of that book?
No, I don't think
so. Yeah, well, I hadn't either. And Jason Sokol wrote it years ago, and he did a number of interviews with white people in the South during this time, I mean, after the fact, going back to get their views, and various people from various walks of life, their views on this period and how it was, their reaction to it, the reaction of their friends, and the change. I mean, it was happening in like, you know, these changes.
Yeah, things are, the ground is shifting.
Yes, the ground under them, they kept, you know, one seismic shift after another, and various people making various adjustments to it. Senator Higgins' adjustments to this are the fact that he is absolutely standing his ground because he believes that he's absolutely right. I think, I mean, the way I'm, my take on him is that it isn't a matter that he hates these Negroes, but the fact is that he absolutely believes that the way the South has been structured, that segregation works. And as long as you can keep people in their defined places, that the society will go on and it will continue to function well. And if you change that, you're going to bring the whole house down, like a house of cards, like a, as he describes it later on in a scene, a line of dominoes. Yeah. And that's, I think, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
And I think even though Higgins was on the wrong side of history, the goal was to humanize him and to see the connection to books and how we all have this universal connection to a love of books and how books were passed on to us and from our parents and our siblings and our partners. Mm-hmm. Books are still very important to him, and I think that's kind of universal.
It complicates him, this connection that he has to Tom Sawyer, because we all love that book. And the fact that somebody loves that book can't be all bad, I guess. I think a lot of, I mean, you like that, right? That we feel a complicated sense of a character.
Yes.
I mean, that is your job.
And he's the primary funder of the state libraries. And that's, it's hard to you know, justify his behavior. But
So William Perry, read the scene, if you would. Do you want to say anything more about it, Cam Johns? I mean, it's a lovely moment, I have to say.
Is this the Tom Sawyer scene?
The Tom Sawyer, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, again, the play is meant to suggest a pop-up book sometimes. And when Emily is learning more about the senator, Emily's assistant says that he gave an interview in the Montgomery Advertiser once, and he talked about his favorite book. And Bill, as Higgins, pops up in a spotlight downstage and tells us a little bit about that.
Here he is, William Perry, this Senator Higgins.
Tom Sawyer, none of that Huckleberry Finn business, which was too long and complicated for my childhood mind to understand. No, like most boys, I wanted to be Tom Sawyer, getting the best of his friends, living by his own rules, watching his own funeral. My father gave me that book. It was a first edition. Then around about 1914, the old Tombigbee River flooded its banks and swept through our home. And after it all receded, I saw like a ring around a bathtub that my bookshelves, with all my boy books there, they were brown, was sealed, soaked with river water. I reached for Tom Sawyer, the spine peeled clean off. I clawed at the remains of the book, and the paper just shredded away. I had Tom Sawyer under my fingernails as they dragged me out of there, crying all the way. I think about my daddy's original copy of Tom Sawyer, probably once a week. To feel it in my hands again, that would be something.
Karen Eisenberg, I wanted to get your sense of Senator Higgins as a character. Tell me how you've been thinking about this role.
He's tricky because he is our villain, except Ken has written it. So you realize all villains have a human side, have a personal side, have children or a spouse or a love for books, have something that is appealing about them, that is understandable, that is relatable, that is likable. So it makes it complex. I'm not sure that we still love Senator Higgins, but I think we have an insight into him. He's afraid of change, which is another theme I find in the play. change is coming. Change is always coming. And are you ready for it? Do you embrace it? And at that time in the South, obviously, it was terrifying. Higgins is the most terrified and is emblematic of that way of thinking at the time. But it's he's an interesting guy. It's great to direct somebody like that because it isn't as simple as saying you're just the bad guy. Be mean, be angry, be tough, be horrible all the time. You have to hear Tom Sawyer and go, oh,
yeah,
I get you.
Yeah. Karen Eisenberg is with us. She directs the production of Alabama Story. Kenneth Jones with us. We heard from William Perry, who plays Senator Higgins. Greta Lambert plays Emily. We'll talk more about Emily when we get back. We also have Stephen D'Ambrose with us, who plays Garth Williams. Alabama Story premieres tomorrow night at 8 o'clock with the Pioneer Theater Company. Runs through January 24th. So to get tickets or more information, you can call 801-581-6961 or just go to our website, radiowest.kuer.org, for the particulars. We'll take another quick break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West and Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're profiling the latest production from the Pioneer Theater Company. It's Kenneth Jones' play, Alabama Story. We have with us Kenneth Jones and Karen Eisenberg, who directs the production. Karen, by the way, we should also mention, is the Pioneer Theater Company's artistic director. We have actors with us, Greta Lambert, who plays Emily. We have William Perry, who plays Senator Higgins. Stephen D'Ambrose, who plays a number of characters, principally Garth Williams. They're here with us in the studio. Alabama Story premieres tomorrow night, runs through January 24th. We'll give you more particulars as we go along. So, Greta Lambert, tell me about Emily. She is restrained, obviously bookish, obviously. I mean, that's her character. But how do you think about the role of Emily?
Well, definitely books are a part of her life. I think she's very passionate about books. They were in her life from early childhood, and she even says in the story that she's not a crusader, especially in this issue with the senator. But she kind of becomes part of it because
she's very reluctant, right? I mean, she doesn't want this thing foisted upon her. She doesn't want to talk to the press.
She certainly doesn't want to be in the spotlight about it at all. But books and information are important. And that they are given to everyone.
Do you feel like you've come to know her pretty well? I mean, I'm thinking about what I learned from just that New York Times obituary that Kenneth encountered. I mean, I know you've, I'm sure, read that, but how much can you learn about? I mean, how much do you have to sort of create? How much can you get from real life? How does that work?
It's kind of hard to explain. It all happens kind of in the back of your creative mind.
Yeah.
You take all these pieces of information and somehow they start to become embodied. Also, I feel like the playwright has really spelled out a lot by the way she speaks, her vocabulary.
She doesn't use contractions, I don't think.
Exactly.
Does she? Yeah.
Exactly. And interestingly enough, there's a lot of alliteration.
Yeah.
It just speaks so strongly about her body even, and her voice and the way she speaks and her manner.
I get a sense she would shush me if I were talking too loudly in the library, right?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Kenneth Jones, tell me a little bit more about the role you wrote for Emily, what part you took from the obit and what you could learn and what part you just wanted for yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I filled in a lot of blanks. I didn't know a lot about Emily. I wanted to give backstories of all of these characters' parents. So parents and children become very important to this. And Emily, it's a play about contrast. So Higgins is huge and wants to be in the spotlight and embraces the spotlight. And Emily just wants the books to speak for themselves and doesn't – and. You know, has to make a choice whether or not how public she's going to be, and her link to her parents became very important to me.
And she's, her link to her parents?
Yeah, just how she was influenced by her parents and how books came down to her.
Yeah. Which is reflected in this scene, actually. I'm not sure what else you want to say about it. She's talking about her father and making a reference to how she sees her responsibility, I guess.
Yes, yes. And, you know, Emily is the moral center of this play. So I was digging to reveal that. And she finally agrees to give an interview, which she doesn't want to do. And this is part of that.
Great. Well, here's Greta Lambert playing Emily from Alabama Story.
My father, my late father, Charles E. Reed, was a doctor. He was chief physician at Culver Military Academy in Indiana. We moved there from North Carolina when I was a baby. Physicians, well, at least in those days, were more transient, I think. He once told me that doctors go where they are needed. I suppose librarians are the same way. I was needed many places, Hawaii even. I spent 2 years there before I returned to the mainland to be with my mother, who had become ill. At any rate, in Indiana, the Culver faculty and our family friends were more of a Southern than a Midwestern culture. I am not unfriendly to the problems of the South. I think the fact that I chose to accept library positions in the South should indicate that I was aware of the patterns I would have to live by. I have never made any effort to be a crusader in changing these patterns. Like a good doctor, who does not judge the reason for an illness but just treats it, a librarian must make books available. I feel that the free flow of information is the best means to work out the problems facing the South, the nation, and the world. Librarians have a difficult time trying to please everyone. Like doctors, I suppose. Nobody likes to take medicine, but it seems to me you want it prescribed by the most informed individuals. Doctors and librarians. You know, I had not made that connection before.
Greta Lambert playing Emily in Alabama Story. Karen Eisenberg, she's so restrained. Like, you want her to be passionate about books and stuff, but she, I mean, how much more perfunctory can you be? I mean, the way she's, but there's some passion brewing underneath, but I guess, but she's really pinched too, right?
It's another complicated one because we want to love her. We want, you know, she's our moral center. We want to fall in love with her, but she is not a warm and fuzzy person. But where she becomes warm and fuzzy is when she talks about books. And so there are these flashes from time to time about that person inside who is passionate, who is relatable, who is we can get excited about and root for, and then comes back the bookish librarian who we've all seen that woman. We know who she is.
Right.
But again, there's a cliche about her and then this whole other complicated piece.
That she doesn't live up to the cliche in some ways.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And it's been a challenge. I mean, not just for Greta, for me, talking about it, trying to figure out the balance of who this is and when we reveal the inside and that love of books and how that comes out and puts color into the character.
Yeah. So how do you play it? I mean, you have to play it the restraint, right? And because you don't want to reveal too much of yourself.
Right, right. And I think Karen's done a great job of kind of mapping out when we see those warm moments, when we see those little hints at her passion.
Yeah. I want to come back to Senator Higgins because there's an interesting moment. I want to have you do this scene. Set this up for us, Kenneth Jones. And there's another character we need to introduce, Bobby
Crone,
who is and this brings us back to Stephen D'Ambrose, who plays Bobby Crone in the play, again, as Garth Williams, which is fascinating. His presence comes back here. And so Bobby Crone is a father figure for Senator Higgins.
Yes, he's an ancient state representative who has been his political guide and his father figure, and the ground underneath them is shifting. And this is about Bobby's advice to Higgins on the topics of behavior. It's about this speaks to character. How do you behave in times of change?
Well, I guess so. So William Perry and Stephen D'Ambrose. So Senator Higgins, as you said before, Senator Higgins is feeling the ground shifting. He doesn't want to budge. But Bobby Crone says, "Look, everything changes." I guess
it's an interesting character because he is of the old guard.
Yeah.
Probably a Klan member.
But
he's wise in the fact that he sees it changing and that it's a fight that you can't win. And that's what he tries to impart to Senator Higgins, knowing full well that he is a father figure. And that, it's an interesting character because he's a cute little grandpa, you know?
Yeah. And complicated. Cute
and
little grandpa
complicated.
Used to be a Klan member.
Yeah.
William Perry, how do you see that relationship?
Well, I think that thing that Stephen just said about that Bobby Crone has the wisdom that Senator Higgins doesn't have.
Yeah.
He, through all of it, and I think through his age maybe and perspective that's given him, he can see the bend in the road that's coming. And Senator Higgins can't. Either Higgins sees it and absolutely is you know, pushing back against it with everything he has because he believes he's right.
Yeah.
He absolutely believes he's right.
I also think that Crone's take on it is don't talk about it.
Hmm.
Stop talking about it and we'll be fine.
Yeah. You're making it worse.
You're making it worse.
Yeah. It's like all of those people who protest, you know, movies and just mm-hmm. makes everyone want to come more. He's yeah. saying that here. Like everyone's buying the book now.
Yeah.
And he says he's giving Alabama a bad name.
Yeah. Giving us a bad name. Yeah.
Right.
Well, here's a scene. This is William Perry, again, who plays Senator Higgins and Stephen D'Ambrose in this role as Bobby Crone.
Bobby Crone, my Bobby Crone, how are you holding up? How you feeling? You're looking young and healthy.
I am neither. And I bet you say that to all the boys.
Oh, only the pretty ones.
E.W., let's have a word.
Anything.
How do I say this to you delicately, son? When is this business going to end?
Which business?
Your endless pursuit with bazooka in hand of bunny rabbits.
Bazooka? Is that what they say? Well, by God, a bazooka's what we need, don't you think? Wipe 'em out. Be sure of it, because if they remain, you know how they breed.
They don't breed as fast as negative press. The New York Times, E.W., Time Magazine, we're all looking like fools down here, picking on a lady librarian and holding a match to a kiddie book that no one heard of till you brung it up.
Who gives a cop's crap about the national media? Just how in the hell do those other papers get this, anyhow? It's an Alabama story. I was talking to local boys.
Have you heard of the wire services? Big deal in journalism, been around for years. Look, E-Dub, you ever read Uncle Remus?
Uncle Remus? I wasn't raised on it. Tom Sawyer was my book. I saw that Disney movie, though. I loved that movie.
Yeah, we all love that zippity-doo-dah, all right. But this rabbit book business, it's going to be your tar baby. Getting all stuck to you till you can't move. Some of the other boys in the House and Senate don't want to get stuck along with you.
I'm not stuck. Who says stuck? What boys you talking about? I got plenty of fellas on my
side. Look, this is your favorite representative giving you advice.
Well, you're more than that to me. You might as well be my father.
My advice? Walk away from this. Bunny rabbits? There are other battles, E-Dub. This one's done.
The world of the South is a line of dominoes. They're falling one by one. And here's another one. And before this, the Montgomery bus boycott. Before that, Brown and the Board of Education. Before that, 1,000 others. This one falls. The rest will follow right on into integration and ruination. And goodbye to glory.
is Bunny Rabbit's The Battle?
The battle is books. The choosing of books by and for our own.
Fair enough. Know what your battle is. I'm late for committee.
Well, you go on. What's the burning issue today?
House Bill 24. We're changing the state flower from goldenrod to the camellia.
Jesus wept. Another domino falls.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, it's worse. It's like watching your own funeral.
You've been reading too much Tom Sawyer.
I want to ask, finally, and I'm wondering how you are all thinking about... this is a play about freedom of expression. I'm wondering if you're reflecting at all what's going on in Paris right now. I mean, that's filling a lot of people's minds.
Yeah, the play is sadly relevant on a lot of topics. Freedom to read, freedom of expression. Yeah, I got some tingles last night when we saw our dress rehearsal. It was very moving. And I think the audience will walk away with a lot of stuff. I think there's a lot to take home.
Well, and it's interesting and scary that a topic from 1959 is still so relevant today. Fascinating. And I think the play is interesting because you can look at it and go, oh, historical piece. And then you really think about it.
Yeah.
And Paris.
Karen Eisenberg, she directs Alabama Story at the Pioneer Theater Company. Kenneth Jones wrote the play. We also have with us Greta Lambert, who plays Emily, William Perry, who plays Senator Higgins, Stephen D'Ambrose, who plays Garth Williams, and the other characters there. Thank you all very much for
being
with
us. Thank
you. Thanks, Doug.
Yes.
Thank you.
Alabama Story premieres tomorrow night at 8 o'clock at the Pioneer Theater Company. Runs through January 24th. For tickets and information, you can call 801-581-6961, and you can get all of the details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.